starting seeds indoors. Thanks for listening to KBOO, and thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. So stay tuned for the Dirt Bag. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW.
Well, good morning. We've reached the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It's time for the Dirt Bag. Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. Hoping Jim will be able to join me. Not here yet. But we have been in contact earlier this week, so I'm assuming he knows about the show. And I'm going to, we'll do things a little bit out of order until Jim gets here, which should be momentarily. Our plants of the month are related, peaches and nectarines. I don't believe we've covered these, but they're in bloom now. And I can cover some of the parts of that, but I'm hoping Jim will be able to fill us in on that. Oh, we just got word that Jim is stuck behind a freight train. And that must be, well, who knows where that would be there in Southeast. I know you get behind those trains there, and they take a while. But, hey, maybe, Jim, you could call in. Maybe we'll try that, 503-231-8187, and we'll do that. But I will talk about seed starting and particularly light requirements and maybe even more importantly, stress requirements. It's pretty easy to start seeds, but getting them toughened up so they can be outside is the biggest problem in my estimation. We also got a doozy of a garden stumper at 1:30. Then Jim will talk about his upcoming trip to Brazil. And what he expects to find there in the line of plants. I'm assuming that's why he's going there. I don't think the Master Olympics are there. I wonder if the Master Olympics, if they just happen afterwards. In any event, I don't think he's too much worried about the Zika virus by going down there. And we will always make room for your questions. 503-231-8187 if you have questions. Gardening questions. This time of year, things to do, what not to do. I'll start out with that. What not to do? Be digging in your garden in this wet weather. One event that is coming up is the Home Orchard Societies. We really push the Home Orchard Society because we hope that that it can become a part of your knowledge base. A lot of what I've learned in... Okay, here comes Jim on the phone. A lot of what I've learned has come from the Home Orchard Society and or others, mostly, and doing. There's maybe equal parts of that. Okay, and when Jim is on, we will do it. Okay, Jim is on.
Good morning.
Hey, there you are.
Yeah, it's never happened that I can recall. I'm out here on Stark Street waiting for a very slow freight train to go by.
Uh-huh. There in Southeast, inner Southeast?
Yep, down here by the freeway.
And drop off the freeway and you get stuck there.
They're going to need trains, you know. I mean, I like to ride trains, but I'm not sure I like waiting for freight trains to go by.
Yes. Now, Jim, you remember those days back in yesteryear when on Powell Boulevard around 17th or wherever, where the train tracks used to go cross Powell.
Oh, yeah.
And, that would back up traffic. But now, of course, they have the nice underpass for traffic.
Well, yeah, you know, their trains are important. They move our goods around.
Indeed.
So you've got to put up with that, I guess.
But, yeah, the city has probably grown up around the tracks in many cases.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're with us on the phone until the train passes there. I also wanted, when you get here, because I don't think the train's going to last a whole hour.
I sure hope not.
I want to do an on-air demonstration of getting fig scion wood ready for just sticking in the ground. I brought some in.
You brought what in, Glenn?
Fig scion wood.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, we don't need to graft those things.
That's right.
And I just want to, I'll explain what you're doing and we'll get, I mean, is this a good time to stick them in the ground?
Yeah, it should be fine. I mean, the main thing is the soil should be light. And right now, today, it doesn't feel like a good day for it because, of course, it's cold and wet and, you know, it doesn't feel like spring. But a few days ago, it felt pretty nice.
Yeah.
But that's what really they need is warm weather. It might be good to wait a little bit. It depends on the soil. You know, if your soil is cold and wet, it's not going to do much.
Because we want it to root.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you need relatively dry soil. I mean, not sopping wet.
Yeah.
It should be relatively warm. So the train has passed, and now I'm driving illegally with my cell phone up to my ears. So
oh, that's right. Okay. All right. Well, I can. Yeah, I'll start on my seat starting, and then when you come in the door, we'll pick up.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll see you about 5 minutes.
Okay. Thanks, Jim.
See
ya. Okay. So for seat starting, as I mentioned, you know, it's relatively easy to get seeds germinated. You start with fresh seeds, and boy, they just almost pop out of the ground. Now, we do need to provide some bottom heat to make it even better. But if you have a warm house at 70 degrees, then that's about what most seeds need. Some are could be cooler, and some would do better in warmer temperatures, soil temperatures. And there's various ways, of course, that you can supply bottom heat, including buying heating mats, putting it on top of the refrigerator, or whatever. I'm not going to get into what I use because it's not many are going to do that. But once the seeds are up, then it becomes critical. Light becomes critical. And as I mentioned earlier, more importantly, stressing the plant. And because what happens if you don't have a greenhouse or a very good light situation is that those seedlings are going to start leaning towards the light and they'll get long and spindly. And first time you put them outside and the gust of wind comes up, they're going to just topple over or rain or something like that. So it's important to stress the plant. Now, what I do, and this requires a little more go-to or more effort on your part, but when it's nice enough day, and nice enough means above 50 and probably not raining a lot, you know, like today would not be a good day, to take the starts out. Take them out immediately. You know, we're going to put some stress on them so the stem becomes stocky and not leggy, and it's not going to be nearly as tall, which makes it vulnerable to rain and wind. So I've done that. I've got quite a few things going, including tomatoes. There's just little, you know, 1 inch now, although they would be a lot taller if I had left them in the house. I used to have a greenhouse, you know, which was great because then you didn't have to necessarily worry so much about the light requirements, but still I had to stress them. And that's why a fan is a good idea to put on your plants, couple of times a day for 5 or 10 minutes just to stress them and mimic really the outdoor conditions where they're eventually going to be living. Another way that you can stress them is just to tickle them or brush your hand over the top of them. Just move them a little bit. We don't want them to live a coddled life. So get the plants germinated, but then your battle is just beginning to harden them up, to toughen them up. And it's not easily done. And then sometimes it's just worth it to pay the $1.50 or whatever for a good stocky start. But you can't always get the types of seeds that you want. All the types of seeds are not grown out at nurseries, although there are a lot better selections now. Benefits to all, of course. Give up some things to get other things. All right, that's about what I want to say on the seed starting. It's way too early to put most plants out. If you had, you could be putting lettuce outside. You could, if you had big enough and tough enough plants, kale and chard, not chard, they could be transplanted out. And in fact, you could start seeding things if the weather was going to be looking more promising. But boy, for the next week even, it's cool and it's wet. And as Jim said, that's not a good condition for root growing. And maybe we should get into this at another time, but we need, if you're a mostly organic gardener, and I think most of the Dirtbag listeners are, that it takes warmer temperatures for the bacteria and other organisms in the soil to become active, which that's what releases nutrients then for that your plants can then use, uptake. And until it gets a little warmer, there's not going to be a whole lot of fertility or nutrients available to the plants. Having said that, I kind of went against my usual rule of thumb, which is I generally don't plant peas until the 1st of March or after. But this year, I looked at the forecast and thought, boy, it looks pretty good for the next 7 or 10 days. And so I put my peas in. I don't remember. Maybe it was the 18th of February or something like that. And here's a key, or here's a tip that you can try for your own pea germination. You can start them inside, but it's not really necessary for peas because they do germinate in cooler temperatures. After I sow the seeds, I cover the row with small panes of glass. You could use plastic, I suppose, but these are little panes of glass that I've collected through the years. And, that come from old windows where they had six little panes in it or something like that. Or sometimes they have some two feet by 1 foot panes of glass. And I just put them right on the soil. It acts as a little greenhouse when the sun does come out and heats up the soil, gets those seeds germinated much quicker. And as importantly, it prevents the cold rain from cooling the soil, which would hamper the germination of the seed. One of the dangers of planting too early in too cold of soil is that the seed will just sit there, and if it's too wet, will just rot. And these panes of glass are great for preventing cooling, and it enhances the warming of the soil. After the peas start poking through, then it's easy enough to just remove the glass and the peas are at it. Sometimes what I do is prop them so they shelter the plant a little bit, let them toughen up a little bit, but generally just taking the glass off works just fine. They will toughen up. And let's see, then the next step for peas, anyway, for me, is I'm going to have to string, so that these are pole peas, so they will climb up the string. All right, as we wait for Jim, why don't we go to our first music selection here. It's what I came up with this time, since we're going to be talking about peaches and nectarines, is everything, or all the songs that I've chosen are related to peaches in some way. But my computer is acting up. I think it happened when I when an automatic upgrade or download or Windows 10 update, when it came back on in the morning, things just haven't been the same yet. So I was not able to get all of my tunes on here. But Patsy, are we kind of ready to go with first Frank Zappa? This is from what is one of his first albums, really, in 1969. The album was called Hot Rats. I have it from a collection of Frank Zappa, but it's an instrumental, Peaches en Regalia, Frank Zappa. Frank Zappa, I read on the, I guess it was Wikipedia, that he, for many years, used that as either the opening part of a concert or as an encore. And here's the encore here right now. Jim is here. I guess we'll put you over there and we'll get set up here. I'll, let's go to the call and we'll... Oh, he's taking the answer offline. Okay, the caller wanted to know if we were ever going to do a show on growing pot. And I think that's a good idea. Jim, can you help us on that one? You
can't eat it, Glenn.
You can't eat it, but is it edible? if they're in a cookie.
Well, you might have to run that one because I'm, you know, all the years I've been growing stuff, I've never grown it and I have absolutely zero knowledge about it.
Okay. We'll get somebody else in here then. But that's a good suggestion. I mentioned, it was about a year ago or so, that the Oregonian was growing some and had a video and a website for that or something like that lines. What do you need there?
I'm trying to turn the volume down.
Down?
Yeah.
What? You're blue there, so just turn down blue and we'll go from there. Okay, I want to, we'll get into this with Jim here on the Home Orchard Society. And the event that's coming up here, the, what do they call it?
Fruit Propagation Fair.
Fruit Propagation Fair, that's it. It's on Sunday.
Sunday, March 20th.
That's right, and then you've got it something there.
Don't miss it.
For growing fruit.
If you want to just come and just hang out and just pick up on the vibes of fruit growing.
And the essence and the odor, the scent.
That's right. And I'll be there. I don't know if you're
going to
be there.
I have another gig going on there. I was going to be at the advice table, Jerry. My buddy Jerry asked me, but I had to turn him down.
Well, I'll try to take your place if I can do it. I'll see if I can fill a little bit of your shoes.
Are you going to be talking about something?
Sure. I'll be there just doing advice.
And you're going to be at the advice table.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And also looking for volunteers, too, to help the Home Orchard Society. So if people out there are motivated to hang out and rub shoulders with and elbows with, fruit nuts.
The titans. Of
this is the place, the place to come to. And of course, the big thing about it is that you can come there and you can look at hundreds of varieties, of apples and pears and peaches and plums.
Figs even?
There should be figs there. There's virtually everything. Not virtually everything, but many, many different kinds of scions and cuttings that you can get. And if you don't feel confident that you yourself can do the grafting, if you have a variety of apple that you've heard about for years and you just really want to try it in your yard, we'll actually graft it for you right on site. You can buy a rootstock from the society and get a piece of scion wood and make your tree and take it home with you.
Here's a story that I haven't repeated in several years now, maybe 6 or 8 years. I have a brother who lives in Eugene, who lives in South Eugene, and would take walks in his neighborhood. It's kind of rural, just on the edge of Eugene. He actually lives outside by a block or two outside the city limits, and he'd walk his dog and whatnot around an elementary school. It has a big yard, and there was a fence row that has lots of seedling apples. And there was one of them that he just particularly liked.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told him, in December, maybe January, go out and cut the scion wood. And then he actually mailed it to me, I think. And I got some rootstock and grafted it. And I grafted one for him and one for me. And so he's growing it now in his own house. But this was just a seedling, so it probably has no name. Mm-hmm. It could, but, we call it a seedling apple because it was probably planted by bird poop or something,
some really well-meaning person might have taken that seed out there and put it in the ground and covered it up nicely with soil.
Could have been one of the elementary school kids.
Could have been that.
From their lunch.
That's more exciting than bird poop.
But the idea that it's a whole new apple is kind of exciting too.
Sure it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where every variety comes from, is a seed.
Right.
Ultimately.
Well, unless we're talking about figs.
Well, that's true.
And I have a piece of wood here in front of me that I cut off my fig tree this morning. It's from last year's growth. Would that be what would be good for figs?
Yes. Sure.
And it would have figs on it. I mean, there's about 4 or 5 figs that are forming already at the very ends. They're just little BB-sized figs right now. Tell me how we would... And it's about this piece that I have right here is probably almost 18 inches long. And it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 buds on it.
Mm-hmm.
What would you recommend on this to plant?
Well, if you're going to do a cutting from that, I would make the cutting probably 6 to 8 inches long. So it would have, I suspect in this case, a couple, 3 buds. It's not important. You can have one bud work from a fig too.
Okay.
But the longer the cutting, the more energy there is in it to make the roots and to survive. So it'll have better success. If you did like a 2-inch cutting, you probably wouldn't have. It would be much less likely to succeed.
So So length is important, but what about the number of buds? Is that important?
Not important as long as you have at least one.
Underground.
Well, no, you can actually do it with just a one bud above ground, and it'll still root.
Okay. See, we're getting some progress here.
Right, and one of the important things with fig cuttings is that you don't want to use the tip wood because the pith is usually quite large and very little actual woody wood there, and it won't root.
So you're talking about the ones that are at the top,
right?
So where the little figs are forming.
That's right.
You necessarily wouldn't want to use that.
That's right. And you can feel it. You can actually feel how it's flexible. You don't want that. Down here, it's much more rigid and firm. And if you look at the end of the wood, you will see that the pith is like tiny. I mean, a 16th of an inch, and your cutting is, probably 3/8 of an inch in diameter. So you want that big, that strong wood for the...
Underground. So in this particular piece... I'd really only get one piece to plant?
Yeah, I'd say one. You might be able to get another one, but the most optimal one is going to be the basil part of this cutting.
So there wouldn't be any harm of just sticking that in the wood too? Or
no, it wouldn't. And it's possible it could root. You're not going to get 100% with any of them. I mean, there's that method you're talking about, just direct stick in the ground.
Yeah.
You know, it...
Well, what would be a way to increase the odds?
Well, you can put rooting hormone on the end of it.
Just on the cut end?
On the cut end.
Make a fresh cut and dip it?
Yep. Mm-hmm. You can use, there's liquid or there's also powder. Either one will work. More available, I think, for the homeowner is probably powdered type. And there's, you can just get it at like, you know, any garden mm-hmm. center should sell it.
And how much does that increase the likelihood of taking?
Oh, lots.
Lots,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, doubling the chances at least?
I would say at least that.
Uh-huh. Well, that sounds like that would be a good thing to do then.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay.
Yep.
And so we don't need to scrape any wood or cut at an angle or anything like that?
I don't. We just do it. It's just a flat end like that is fine.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, if you use rooting hormone, just read the instructions on how to do it, because if it's liquid, you do a soak, and the percent and the concentration changes depending upon whether it's a hardwood cutting. In this case, a hardwood cutting, typically the type of rooting hormone we use a 1-to-5 ratio of 1 part rooting hormone, 5 parts water. For softwood cuttings in the summertime, it is as little as 1-to-20. So it just depends upon the wood. And because if you use it at a stronger concentration, it'll burn the cells.
Uh-huh. And where do you recommend just putting this into the ground or into a pot with potting soil, or?
Well, your better success is going to be in potting soil that's light. The lighter the mix, the better. You can do it just putting it in the ground, but the soil around here is fairly heavy, and it likes more aeration. The more air around in general in the soil than you're going to get from that. You'll still get some. If you put out 10 cuttings, you probably could get probably 3 or 4 are going to root.
Oh, okay.
You know, if in regular soil, if you do it in light soil, you probably could get 8 out of 10.
Uh-huh. And if you get if you put rooting compound, you might get 12 out of 10.
That's right. I think the math doesn't work.
That's like Stephen Wright said, right. You know, I made in his droll deliveries that I made instant coffee in a microwave and almost went back in time.
Right. You know, and you were talking, you got me all excited about apples just for a moment there before we went to the figs.
Oh.
So I thought that we should go back just for a moment and tell folks, because actually yesterday I went out and cut cyanwood.
It's not too late for that, huh?
It depends on the variety. Oh. But if you went out and looked at your tree, if there is that heirloom apple that you would really like to have from your grandmother's place, or just because you really like it is down the street, if you go out and look at it, if the buds have not pushed yet, and I'm not talking about the flower buds, I'm talking about the vegetative buds, which are going to be at the top of the shoots. And if they haven't started pushing out leaves, you can still cut them and take them to the fruit propagation fair and come home with a tree that's likely going to grow and make another one.
Uh-huh.
So it's not too late, as I found myself yesterday.
Well, you know, a lot of people have been saying, and I think this is just due to mostly faulty memories, that, things are so early this year.
Hmm.
I don't know.
You know, it started out for a little while early, and then it's kind of like today.
That'll just set things.
It just feels cold and wet.
Well, it is cold and wet, Jim.
It does. Oh, it is. That's why it feels that way. Huh?
Well, okay, so the Fruit Propagation Fair, March 20th, 10 to 4 at the Washington County Fairgrounds. No.
Clackamas
County Fairgrounds.
Fairgrounds. Beautiful Canby, Oregon.
That's right.
And
not Washington.
Admission is cheap. If you join the Home Orchard Society or are already a member, it's $5 individual, $7 for the whole family. And I don't know that they count how many kids that you can bring to call it part of your family. But and then if you're not a member, it's $7 for the individual and $12 for the family. And it's worth much more than that.
Yeah.
And I do encourage people to join if you're interested in fruit. It's a great organization to be part of. And we have a quarterly publication and again, lots of different events and opportunities to learn about grafting and pruning and all that kind of stuff. So we're really bullish on fruit.
That's right. Okay. So Home Orchard Society, that's the only event we'll talk about here. So thank you for the primer here on the fig,
sure,
too. So that goes with just about any type of fig, is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And just also I should mention the website for the Home Orchard Society is homeorchardsociety.org. There.
All right.
Okay.
Well, we are at half past the hour here. Let us, I've got a stumper that you don't even know about.
I wondered what happened with our stumper.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we'll get into that. So let's, Patsy, what do you have queued up there? It doesn't matter. Okay, let's go with, let's do the stumper and our world party theme song. Okay, don't know what, don't know when, don't know why. World party. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a typo there, Jim. So the question is, when is a nut not a nut? There's several answers to this. And if nobody gets it, I'll start giving some hints here. But this, I think people will get this here. 503-231-8187 if you know the answer to that. When is a nut not a nut? Okay. Let's talk about our plants of the month.
All right.
Peaches and nectarines.
Okay.
They're starting to push. Now, aren't they pink? Some pink blooms out there now?
Oh, yeah. I have for us right now, it's the plant. It's our own plant of the month. And the reason is because we've discovered some things in the last couple of days that I didn't know about peaches.
Well, this is just after 7 decades of life, Jim is learning things.
That's right. Yeah, you know, if you stop learning, that's it. As far as I'm concerned, you know, what fun is there anymore? So
it's great that brain is still functioning.
Yeah. So first thing with peaches and nectarines in our climate here on the west side of the Cascades, disease resistance, particularly leaf curl resistance, is really important. And I suspect there are listeners out there that know what I'm talking about. If you go to a box store nursery and you get a California peach, you know, like a Red Haven or Alberta or who knows what variety they're selling, and with all the good intentions and all, you plant that tree, likelihood is you're going to be unhappy because that tree is going to get peach leaf curl, which is a real drag. It's the plant starts to grow, it looks nice, it blooms even, and then the leaves start getting weird and kind of some of the curled up and
when kind of blistery almost
blistery,
looking.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that the foliage will eventually drop and the leaves, the flowers will not set fruit, maybe just a few. And generally, if it's in really bad, really susceptible, the tree can die from it. So that's the first thing is make sure you plant. I would totally recommend planting.
Yeah, we just cannot recommend planting a regular, we'll say.
Because the spraying required to deal with that peach leaf curl is not what you want to do.
And these resistant varieties are excellent tasting.
Yeah.
They're
good.
There's no sentimental reason not to do that.
They're not going to be a Red Haven or an Alberta. I mean, they're not, mostly because it's more like appearance, really, and stuff you're not going to have that. But you're going to have a nice fruit, and it's very good. And to have your own fresh peaches and nectarines is really special.
Somebody from Georgia, when they tasted my frost peach, they said that's the best peach they've ever had.
Really?
So that's from Georgia.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Georgia peaches there.
And frost, another name for frost, is Oregon curl free, by the way.
Oh, is that a... Okay.
Same thing.
Same thing. All right.
That's the first thing. And... other than that, I mean, you can grow them here, and I every year I get great crops.
Yeah,
I love it. I mean, I have them in the freezer. I eat them on my cereal every day. I mean, it just
it's a type of blight that peach leaf curl is. It's a fungal disease, and as our colleague Ted said one time, just imagine that in every drop of rain there's a spore of peach leaf curl fungus.
So if you can catch every drop,
that's right.
And in fact, you can grow really tiny dwarf peaches under a roof so they don't get rained on.
Or put an umbrella over it. I mean, people go to some lengths.
Yes, right.
Right.
Right. but right. I don't.
Okay, Jim, we're going to go take an interruption here and go to the phones.
Sure.
All right, Annalisa is first.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You got a question?
Yes, about a plum tree.
Okay.
I planted this plum tree about 3 years ago, and my neighbor had one already a few years. And that's I first noticed what I saw were little black spots on hers. And after I planted my tree and fruit came on, my plums got the same, whatever it is, disease, brown spots.
On the leaves and fruit?
No, on the fruit.
Just fruit, okay.
And I would like to know what to do about it organically.
Okay.
How bad is it? I mean, is it like just a small spot or does it really wreck the fruit?
No, it gets bad.
Yeah.
It starts with one or two, but then the fruit is not ripe yet. But by the time the plums are getting ripe, you know, I cannot eat them anymore. Mm-hmm. So is there anything I can do to prevent this? And I don't even know what it is, of course.
Right. You got any idea, Glenn?
it's probably a fungal disease.
Yeah.
Or it could be bacterial as well. There's some, you know, bacterial canker or something that those they get pretty bad, but I've not seen that symptom.
On the fruit.
It does happen on this. It does affect the fruit, too.
The bacterial canker can. Mm-hmm. Generally, the bacterial canker is characterized by kind of amber oozing.
Right. Die back on branches and so forth. Right.
Right.
But from what I've read, plums are more difficult to grow here than some other fruits. But what I've read that same bacteria can affect the fruit as well. And the only thing that I know to do about it is copper sprays. And you can do a copper spray when the fruit is just forming. I mean, after the flowers, it's a good idea to do one earlier too, before the plant, while the plant is still dormant. And then after bloom, to do another one.
And copper is considered an organic spray.
It is.
Yeah, somebody else mentioned that, but I forgot the name. Yeah, but now that you mention copper spraying.
Hey, that just reminds me, I wonder if, you know, arsenic is a natural pesticide.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if these fruit trees around the hot spots in Southeast and North Portland, if they are having less disease problems on their fruit.
Oh.
Well, it'd be interesting just to see if that, in fact, what the ramifications are. I mean, you still wouldn't want to eat the stuff, but...
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, little side. Jim, back to you.
It's okay. You live in the city. I live in the country. We thankfully don't have arsenic in our glass factories in our neighborhood. Yeah. But that would, you know, I think that would be the thing, what I would try to do with that is a copper spray.
And, you know, you might even try some of the dormant sprays when the tree is dormant. It's not dormant now.
No,
so
it's
don't do
starting
that.
To bloom.
Right. So, right. But copper can still be used.
Before when the fruit comes on.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even
after it sets fruit, and you want to watch the ratio on the package with when you buy the copper or buy a liquid or powder, it will tell you the rates to use at different times. And when the tree is dormant, you can use a stronger rate than you can when it has leaves on it. So you want to
follow the directions.
All right. So thank you very much.
You bet.
Good luck.
Yeah, it's nice having plums. All right.
Yep.
Okay, we're going to stay at the phones because I think we have some stumpers. Jersey. Good morning, Jersey. You got a question or an answer?
No, the answer is, of course, it's a peanut. It's a legume.
That's one right answer.
I can give you another one. No, I guess that wouldn't be fair.
Okay, yeah, let's get somebody else. I mean, you don't get a prize or not, but...
Oh, no prize.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, yes. Oh, that is correct. One nut is not a nut, is a peanut. And, of course, it's a legume, but we still call it a nut. Okay,
correct.
So... But
I did want to have one question.
Okay.
Or even a point. Yeah, the city... I noticed the city trees, especially the street trees, the plums didn't have that ooze last year. And I'm thinking it probably was the dry and the heat, because I noticed most of the wet years that you get those splits. So,
Yeah, it was a dry. It was a great year for peaches and all, pretty much all fruit last year because it was so dry. And
but they were small. That's the thing.
Yes, I agree with that too. My peaches were smaller than normal, but mm-hmm. it just shows you that these fungal diseases are spread by rain, mostly.
Yes. Darn that rain. I still want more of it, though.
Yeah. You're in luck this year.
Thanks.
Okay, good job, Jersey.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we can have more answers here, Patsy. So let's see. Okay, Tim, you got an answer or a question? Well, there is more answers, and we're queuing in on it here, talking about peaches and nectarines.
Uh-huh.
So that's my next hint here.
Yeah.
So, the first step then is to choose a leaf curl resistant variety, Now it's called Oregon Curl Free. Frost, you might get it someplace. Charlotte, is that another
one? Charlotte's another one. There's a new one that we've used to call Q18 for years. It's been renamed. It's now called Salish Summer.
Huh.
And that's a white flesh peach.
Huh. That's a nice name.
If you have a One Green World catalog, you can see the picture I took of it with the beautiful foliage, and it's right here, right at our place. I mean, it's a really nice, very healthy tree and wonderful fruit. Nectarines, there's only one, really. Well, there's two. There's Crybeach, which we've offered for years when I owned One Green World. And it's a small nectarine, white flesh, very sweet, juicy.
Hmm.
And then we have a seedling. We found a seedling of that, and we call it Pacific Pride, which is a little earlier ripening, but of the same type of white flesh
still
nectarine.
Still white, huh? Well, my a friend who I every year work on pruning her nectarine tree, and it must not be curl resistant, but since I've been working with her a dozen years or so, she's always had a bumper crop.
Hmm.
So are nectarines a little less susceptible to curl? Leaf curl?
I haven't noticed that.
Okay.
I think that they should be... There's no reason for them to be less or more, you know, than peaches, as far as I know. But I think that's an interesting observation, and we should pay attention to that tree. I mean, it could be a variety that probably is a cultivated variety from some other source, and I'd like to see the fruit. So
okay,
check it out.
Well, yeah, we'll remember that some Wednesday in August.
It's too bad we can't have like a little field trip while we're on the on the radio. Huh?
We'll just take your phone along and.
That's right. We'll record it.
Right. Okay. Lee has a question. Good morning.
No, I don't have a question. Oh. I have a comment about the spots on the prunes.
Okay.
Basically, bacterial canker, when they affect the fruit, they turn it all moldy rather than just spots. But I'm wondering if it's not the brown marmorated stink bug that's a problem, because I've got them on my property now, and they have little spots all over the, where they feed.
Yes, and what troubles me in Annalisa's situation is that the spots continue to get bigger and made the fruit, inedible. And I'm so it, as the after this, if it was this stink bug, the feeding spot may just have gotten infected with just normal everyday fungus to make it mold and rot.
So it's a secondary issue.
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Or is it, if it's bacterial canker or some other type of fungal disease, is it just spreading even though the fruit hasn't been punctured?
It's tough, to diagnose when you can't see.
Right.
I have found, though, a product called Surround,
mm-hmm.
which is a kale and clay that you can, add to water and spray on, and I found it very effective in controlling insect damage.
Is it certified for mm-hmm. plums?
I believe it is.
Okay.
It's organic, right?
I didn't know if that, if the label says it's not, then it's not.
The only place I found it is a place down south on 99E. It's an ag supply, and you got to buy a 25-pound bag of it.
Hmm. I don't know if our local stores have it or not, but it's good stuff. Check that out.
It's a good product. The only thing you got to do is keep applying it, because when it rains, it gets washed off.
And Lee or Jim, what is the mode of action that it works to prevent damage?
Barrier.
It's just a physical barrier, mm-hmm. And it turns the tree and fruit white. I mean, you have to get pretty good coverage.
Well, you have to focus on the fruit more than the foliage.
If you're putting it on by hand, yeah.
It was a way that people, I have a good friend who, Glenn Mills, you might know Glenn, mm-hmm. he used it in his organic walnut orchard many years ago to the walnut husk fly. It was the first thing he found that he could use to keep it off from infecting the walnut nuts. So it's a very good product, and I think it's a good mention. Thank you for mentioning that.
I got, when I spray it on my pears and apples, I get about 60% good fruit without, damage from apple maggot or coddling moth. That's a good yield.
That's a very good yield for not doing anything else.
Yeah, thanks.
You bet. Good comments.
You.
Okay, we're still looking for the answer to our stumper. When is a nut not a nut? Okay, so we know that peanuts are not a nut, but right. What else, so to speak? Okay, Mike, you're with the dirtbag.
I got a question. My perception of the natural antibacterial process is kind of an ionization in the cloud, and then as the rain comes down, it kind of naturally disinfects the leaves, and yet you guys are all talking about how rain is now the carrier of bacteria and stuff like that. Am I totally off on this ionization process?
Well, the rain itself might be nice when it's purely from the sky, but once it hits the plant, then if there's the disease is there, or the spores are in the air, it carries them to other parts. And of course, because it's water, it will any wound or opening into the plant tissue, the water will carry that bacteria into that wound. So it's not
sure. So you say it can be both a carrier and a disinfector at the same time, then.
Well,
is that kind of what, I don't know what
I mean. Saying, I don't know that we're commenting on the disinfectant part of it at this point, but as far as the carrier, yes,
sure. I can see how it can pick it up just in an aeration process, and possibly. I guess the bacteria is light enough that it can kind of go up within an air.
Yeah, it's just the spores. Well, not in the case of bacteria. I don't know if bacteria have spores, but fungus does. Mm-hmm. And so they put out billions of these little spores.
Spores, and so the spores are airborne, and then they get pulled into the water.
Yeah.
And so anything can go in there. So whatever's in your environment can go up in that. And then, so if we're down on the coast, we get lots of fungus, lots of bacteria. So probably we got lots of stuff within that. Within that area. But then, I'm trying to figure out this natural disinfection process, because I think there is a way that the environment itself will kind of naturally disinfect too, is there?
Well, if you think about evolution over the years, all these creatures, both beneficial and non-beneficial, have figured out ways to propagate themselves. And so rain is just kind of a neutral object, and it can be good or it can be bad, it itself can't be good or bad, but it carries things that are good and it can carry things that are bad.
And I would, maybe suggest that if you are in an isolated spot where peaches haven't been grown or plums or whatever for decades, then you may not have this pathogen available. For something to go wrong, you need three things. The right conditions for it to happen. You need the thing to happen, and then those two, all of them, to get together.
Right.
Right.
So,
okay, cool.
So if you isolate,
I'll research it more. But thanks for all your tips.
You bet.
I got a peach that's doing exactly what you're doing, and I got So I think it's been good. Thank you.
Great. You bet. Thanks for the call. Okay, Patsy.
Yeah, we had two callers who didn't want to stay online, but Lorraine, who suggested a cashew nut was not really a nut, and Dennis, who mentioned Brazil nuts not being a nut.
Well, they are both right, but they're not alone, because there's many more. Mm-hmm. So this is technically, should we just do it here now rather than keep...
Sure.
So these, the nuts that they talked about, and also, and we've been talking about, you know, peaches, plums, cherries, but also walnuts, almonds, and pecans, they're also, they're all considered drupes, not true nuts, because a drupe is a type of fruit in which an outer fleshy part surrounds a shell, what we sometimes call the pit, with a seed inside.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So it's a drupe.
Interesting.
That's just the scientific part of it. So,
so a filbert would be a nut.
No, it is a drupe because it has a fleshy part on the outside.
It's not fleshy.
Well, it is at the beginning, just like a walnut and an almond.
Boy, I would, you know, the part, the husk of a filbert is pretty. It's just a thin thing. It's not fleshy.
I mean on the outside of the hard shell.
Right. No. But so what is a nut then?
I didn't get that far, but maybe like an acorn or something like that, that never had a fleshy outside. Now the fleshy outside, disappears. And in fact, in almonds and a peach, pit, you know, really looks like an almond.
Sure. In fact, that's what it's interesting. As we've been growing almonds, I've become kind of fascinated by how much they look like just sort of a dried up peach.
Yes. And what I've learned being in the bee industry is that when people know, of course, that a lot of honeybees go down to pollinate almonds, that it's kind of like there's a fleshy part that has to be taken off before you get to the nut, we'll call it. And that is actually saved and fed as it's used as a cattle feed because it's very nutritious. Mm-hmm. It's the fleshy part.
So I suggest that what we do is we put this little project, this little garden stumper on the shelf, and next week or next month we ask people to call in because it could be a second part to the garden stumper with true nuts.
And they're going to say Jim and Glenn.
How's that sound?
So, okay.
Because now I'm a little confused. I'm going to go home and read up on
this. Yes, okay. Well, this internet research, may not be research at all.
I'll just whip out my iPhone right now and do it, but I won't.
Somebody pulling my leg. Okay, Terry, did you say? Yes, okay, Terry, good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Good morning. I'm hoping that you guys can help me not have a stomach ache when I drive through Yamhill County.
Whoa. Okay.
So I'm a city girl, but I drive through the county for work, and I'm noticing there's a lot of large fields that have a yellow-orange tint to them, and I'm hoping you can tell me that that's not Roundup.
You mean the foliage has that tint?
Not everything. Foliage. I'm talking about crops. I'm talking about whole areas where there is
whole fields. Crops. Whole fields that were green that are now look like they're turning brown or yellowish.
It was yellowish.
Yeah, it's yellowish orange. It's pretty bright. Like if you're a photographer, you'd want to shoot it because it's just beautiful layered between the greens. But it kind of gives me a stomachache because I'm thinking, oh, Lord, is that all Roundup?
What did you say about between the greens?
Well, you know, as you look at the fields, there's a patch of green, there's a patch of spring green, then there's a streak of bright yellow-orange. And then there's the brown of the muddy fields that haven't been planted yet. It's very beautiful, but
okay.
It doesn't make me happy thinking that it might be...
I can probably assure you that it's some kind of herbicide.
Uh-oh.
What type it is hard to say, but that's typically how fields are managed, not how our fields are, but how some fields are, where people will spray down all of the cover crop or whatever it is on top of there before cultivating it.
Yeah, I was afraid of that. I was hoping you could tell me it was something wonderfully organic and not to worry about it.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be an organic herbicide.
If it turns, okay. Yeah, just too no. Organic herbicides are very expensive. Farmers wouldn't use those.
Yeah.
Most farmers.
Sorry about that.
The nuts. when I lived in Guatemala, I saw that cashews seem to grow on the ends of fruit. Does that make it a non-nut?
Well, I don't know. We don't know. The ones that I have listed here are walnuts, almonds, pecans. So we're going to do more research on this.
Okay. Thanks for your show.
You bet.
And it's a fascinating subject because not only are we right now exploring peach flowers, because we found out just in the last couple of days that some peaches have male sterility. The flower is not capable of pollinating itself or other flowers. And we found this out by sending a bunch of flowers to a peach researcher in West Virginia. So now we're sort of in this, and the flowers we sent were from our peach leaf curl resistant varieties, and they set fruit. So they're pollinated by something. So now we're very interested in exploring this further, and we also want to do some pollination of those flowers with something else to try to create some new varieties. But and so that's a bit fascinating for us. And then the almonds, we're also checking out our Ukrainian almonds for self-fertility. So what we just did a few days ago is bag some flowers and isolate them so they can't be pollinated by bees or any other insect. And then we will do some self-pollinating and see what happens.
It's always something.
It's fun.
All right. Okay. Lorraine? No. Loretta.
Hi. I have a question. I'm a novice gardener, and I moved into a house that had a pear tree. And for the first 3-4 years that I was here, I got really nice fruit. Last year, the lawn guy pruned it back, and the fruit, it looked fine from the outside, but when you opened it, it had been eaten up by some animal creature. So I'm wondering, is this the time of year that I need to do some kind of spray, or what do? I really don't have a clue.
Well, you said you had good fruit for several years, and then the tree was
pruned? Yeah, probably about three or four years, it seemed fine. You always get, if you don't spray, you always get a few bites. But
was the damage from the previous years the same as the damage from last year?
No, last year was bad, and then I started.
I mean, the same type of damage in each fruit.
No, because the previous year it was like bugs eaten from the outside. This time the fruit looked fine, but when you opened it, it was rotting from the inside out.
Well, sometimes you'll get pears that if they've been allowed to ripen on the tree too long, then they look fine. But when you finally get to them, then they're not. Just in general, most pears should be harvested well before they're ripe.
Really? You go and pick them even before they're loose off of their own.
Oh yes,
that's right.
Yes.
And the way and the technique I use, which is once I see a couple drop, you can go before that time, but you lift the fruit gently up with your hand. If it comes off, it's ready to take off the tree.
And I've done some experiments when I'm out harvesting, and most of the. This is for the winter fruit, the Anjou that I have. And when I lift up, many of them will come off, but some of them will still be hard on there. And, you'd really have to twist it and whatnot to get it off. And so oftentimes I leave those just so I don't have to deal with as many fruit. But for experiments, sometimes I will rip them off. And sometimes I'll even take the spur and a little leaf. And then I use that as the identifying one. Okay, this one I may have harvested too early. Well, what did I find? Fine.
No problem.
So right. So the fruit was fine, and it turned out to be fine. So I'm
not
thinking.
Anything I have to spray or
no,
because
no.
I thought, well, maybe last year because of the drought, because I really didn't water it. Maybe like I should have. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just one tree in my yard, So.
So I think err on the side of harvesting too soon rather than too late, and I think you'll be fine.
Yeah. Let us know.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
All right.
Thank you. Okay, Jim, in the minute we have here, let us know what you're going to be discovering in Brazil.
This fascinating trip, about a week and a half, we're heading out. And, two and a half weeks. We're going to southern Brazil to a town, a region, well, the biggest town is Florianopolis, which I didn't even know about until just a few months ago. And in the forest, there are pineapple guava plants growing in nature. And yerba mate as well. Which is kind of fascinating.
A quick comment from...
A caller said that to confirm that there is Roundup being sprayed in that area where the last caller mentioned.
Okay. Yamhill County. That's it, right. Okay, thank you, Patsy.
So,
Pineapple guava in the wild.
In the wild, right. And there's researchers there we want to talk to. We want to learn more about how they utilize the fruit and propagate it and just expand our knowledge base. Because I've been growing that plant for 30 years, and I love it. I think it's by far my favorite evergreen shrub. I mean, it's just a beautiful shrub, and it has beautiful flowers, which you can even eat the petals on. And it's just a very interesting plant and pollinated by birds.
Okay.
Down there. So we'll come back with some more information.
And you'll be here in next month then, in 5 weeks from now?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Well, we'll get an update on it whenever you return. So.
Yeah.
Jim, glad you could make it. Pesky train held you up a little bit.
Know.
Patsy, thank you very much. Our ace fill-in engineer today. I'll be back. We'll be back in 5 weeks, the next dirt bag. Thanks for listening. That's my story so far. I got a spade and a big axe and 100 miles.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Fade to Black, a book release event for political prisoner Jalil Muntakam on Thursday, March 10th at 7 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center in Portland. This political education and community event will promote the recent book release of Escaping the Prism, Fade to Black. Jalil is a political prisoner who organized with the Black Panther Party in the Bay Area and was underground with the Black Liberation Army. He was captured when he was 19 in 1971 and has been locked up ever since. This event will feature local talent and activists.